south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, now, here's some recent Latin news. For all you expats, gonna-bes, and wannabes out there who are thinking about Ecuador, possibly because you believe it's slightly less corrupt than a lot of other Latin American governments, listen to this. And this comes from a South American newspaper called La Nación. It says, and I'll paraphrase to cut out the boring parts, in one of the most telling examples of political corruption in recent history, we have the case of Pedro Delgado. Pedro Delgado was the director of Ecuador's central bank until he fled the country a few years ago. Why? Well, it was discovered, amongst other things, that he had a fake diploma in economics. Okay, so you're thinking maybe that's not so unusual in a Latin country anyway. But Pedro Delgado, guess what? He's President Correa's cousin. Then it goes on to say, adding insult to injury, when this was found out, Delgado was allowed to flee Ecuador without any trouble. And at a press conference, President Correa insisted at the time that Delgado was only traveling to Miami to attend his son's wedding. Yep, it's me again, Johnny. There you have it. More proof that these big-wig government thieves have to go to Miami. That's the place to be. Oh, brother. But back to the story. Anyway, Correa, the president, said at the time if he did not return from Miami, he'd publicly denounce Delgado, his cousin, himself. However, to this day, the president's cousin Pedro remains a fugitive, and there is an active warrant out for his arrest, but only in his country, nowhere else. Meanwhile, he's living the life of a king in South Beach, Florida. What else is new, huh? Then it goes on to say, this was not the first time President Correa tried to deceive the public with his forked tongue. In 2008, he vowed to resign if a commission could prove that he, the president, was aware of bloated and padded government contracts his brother, Fabricio, had signed. Well, the commission assigned to the case to investigate his brother concluded that the president did indeed know of these contracts. But instead of fulfilling his promise to resign, Correa turned around and sued the commission. He said they were liars, so he sued them for perjury. So the commission disbanded and the case faded away. No more publicity on it at all. Now, you might wonder how all this is possible and how he can get away with all this without the media going nuts. Well, it's possible because Correa and the Ecuadorian government control about 85% of all the media outlets. And the ones he doesn't like that do not follow government protocol or policy, he shuts them down or has a government agency investigate them until they clam up or are forced into bankruptcy. Oh, and by the way, the National Institute of Human Rights released their annual report on October 17th, labeling Venezuela and Cuba as the top two repressive governments out of all the 20 Latin American countries. No surprise there, huh? And by the way, singles out Ecuador as the worst Latin country in terms of violations of free speech. So why do I bring this up? Because I can tell you this, so many long-term expats down here in all the Latin countries know absolutely nothing about what's happening at their own doorstep politically. And it's not because so many expats don't know enough Spanish, it's just that they don't care and they don't bother to find out either. In fact, here's a perfect example. I must know two or three dozen long-term expats that live in Antigua, Guatemala. I'm talking about expats who've been there 10 or 15, even 20, 30 years. And you know what? Every single one of them was duly surprised when maybe a year and a half ago, the three-term, or was it four-term, mayor of Antigua was thrown into prison, and I guess they threw away the key after they discovered he'd stolen over the years about $40 million and had 25, or was it 50, phantom employees on the payroll for years and years. And all the while, these long-term expats living and doing business in that city, not two or three blocks away from the courthouse, the municipal building, and the mayor's headquarters. Not only did these long-term expats have no idea this guy was stealing the city blind, and that's been going on for 15 or 20 years. The fact is, not a single one of these long-term expats even knew the mayor's name. So yes, in every single Latin country, all the politicians are corrupt from the bottom on up. But in the end, us gringos and expats really don't give a Why? They live in their own corrupt, superficial world and don't affect us, really. Except when their pinhead bodyguards double park their bulletproof SUVs, blocking traffic. That's why, expats, I always recommend you keep your gun at home. So, in regards to purulent, pus-brained politicians, we don't mingle, we have nothing in common, we don't ask them for anything. And even if you're invited to mingle with them, I suggest you don't, because they're poorly educated, superficial lowlifes with varying degrees of halitosis. Why bother with them? It's just not worth it. They're completely out of our business and social circles anyway. And the real point is you should never pick your Latin American final destination by what you perceive as your country of choice's level of corruption. They're all thoroughly corrupt. In the end, you should be rating countries based on their security and climate, as well as their economy and cost of living, and maybe most importantly, not the strength, but the weakness of a particular Latin country's government. So the more corrupt, chaotic, weak, lazy, and small a particular Latin government is, the more gringos and expats seem to flourish. Oh, and about that International Human Rights Survey I mentioned, it also points out that the Latin country that practices the most race, sex, and class discrimination is, come on, take a guess. Nope, not Costa Rica, though they're way up there. Are you thinking maybe Argentina? Now, I don't blame you if you said Argentina. They are highly racist and classist. In fact, a couple of years ago, I was at a beachfront resort in Argentina. It was a big, fancy, four-star, first-world-style hotel. And since in most countries in Latin America, the beachfront is public, so if you build a nice four-star hotel or whatever there, or even a residential property, you can't fence off or block off your property all the way to the ocean or the lake, whatever. You have to leave some space open for people to casually walk by, you know, the public. And if you're close to a city, that just might be the sweaty masses, so look out. Oh, and by the way, many beachfront property owners do violate that law with impunity, and they block off their own little section of beach with a fence or a wall, whatever. And because this is Latin America, they get away with it. I mean, there are no beachfront police, you know? So, unless a complaint comes in from someone up way high, you probably can get away with it too. Not telling, just saying. Anyway, at this particular resort, there wasn't a lot of public. If you're on the beach, maybe you'd see six or seven people walk by about every half an hour, coming from the north or the south of the beach. Yep, there were locals, you could tell. They couldn't afford to stay at a three or four-star hotel. Just a bit too unfashionably scruffy, you might say. I mean, these days, in fashion, anything goes, right? But when it comes to beachcomber types, there's scruffy and there's scruffy. So every day, a lot of people from the hotel would make their way over to the beach where there was a nice bar and restaurant. All the upscale ladies would be working on their tans, reading about Latin soap stars and the Kardashians in the Latin version of People and Cosmo magazine. Yes, they have those rags in Spanish, too. So the upscale ladies and guys sit around all day sucking on expensive umbrella drinks and such. And everybody would usually take a stroll on the beach or walk out on the pier that was located there. And on your way back into the hotel, there was a guard standing in the big arched opening. And he'd make sure that you either had a colored bracelet on signifying you were staying at that hotel. If not, he'd still let you in if you were a business person, nice clothes, upscale looking, if you looked the type. So in effect, this guard was the filter for people coming off the beach in case they weren't staying at the hotel, or in his eye, you weren't the upscale type. So the regular locals were definitely discriminated against. And I saw it for myself four or five different times. As I was walking in, the guy would just nod and smile at me, being a tall, light-haired white gringo. That gringo advantage again. Oh, and he'd flash his snaggletooth smile, making sure I'd see that lone gold tooth in there. Yes, he was a member of the sweaty masses himself, only as a kind of a bouncer, he was on the inside looking out. So, ironically, it was his job to keep people like him out. Interesting, huh? I remember one hotel guest, a very dark-skinned girl from the Dominican Republic, who was following a few steps behind me into the hotel. The guard didn't ask me for ID or what room I was staying in, but he gave her the third degree. Okay, big deal, you might say, but she was with her family, all of them dark-skinned Dominicans, and they all got the same treatment too, over and over. And in the week that I stayed there, I saw that happen 3 or 4 more times. Surprise, surprise, it never happened with light-skinned, European-looking people or gringos like me. However, if you were a bit dark and short, the guard would generally ask for their room number or to see their key. Even if those people had one of those colored bracelets on, meaning they were signed up for the all-inclusive package. In fact, one time I said to the guard, "How come you quiz people who've got a bracelet on?" He said, "Well, you know, a bracelet's an easy thing to counterfeit." Maybe, that could be. But I didn't have one of those bracelets because I was not on the all-inclusive plan, yet he never asked me what room I was staying in. I must have walked in and out of that place from the beach 50 times. So bottom line, yes, Argentina is a highly racist and classist society. And that would be mostly because of all that European blood that came in at the turn of the century and in and around World War II. And when they got to Argentina, they strictly stuck to their own kind and basically inbred, which is why about 5% of the people in Argentina, most all of obvious European descent, own about 80% of the land and the businesses in the country. But I guess that's pretty much the way it is everywhere, right? Yes, even in old vomit land. That's it. Argentina showed up number 2 on that same survey, which ranks all 20 Latin countries in discriminatory behavior based on race, culture, socioeconomic status, and general physical appearance. So who was number 1 on that list? Did you guess Chile? If you did, maybe it's because you've been down there and you've seen discrimination in action. In fact, that Serbian report goes as far as to say that 61% of Chileans admit openly in this survey that they engage in discriminatory behavior based on physical appearance. And 57% of Chileans say they engage in discriminatory behavior based on socioeconomic status. And 52% of Chileans say they engage in discriminatory behavior based on the type of clothing and appearance a person has. Now, of course, that goes for Chileans judging other Latins. Though as far as gringos and expats in Chile, remember, we've got that gringo advantage going for us, and all Latins seem to like, if not love, everything gringo. So, we're kind of the obvious exception to that rule. The fact is, you could be a scruffy, greasy-haired, backpacking gringo in Argentina or Chile, and the locals will smile and treat you quite nicely. In fact, they might even invite you over for a drink or dinner. In fact, I've seen that happen myself. A college-age scruffy backpacker sitting in a bank in Chile next to an older lady, they struck up a conversation, as will happen with gringos, and before you know it, he was writing down her home address because he'd just been invited to dinner with the family. I saw it for myself. I've seen that happen many times. In fact, it's happened to me, too. So might there be ulterior motives in a situation like that? Well, sometimes it's just because a local Latin person has never seen or talked to a gringo before in person, so they're extremely curious. Like anywhere, life can be boring. And certainly, inviting a gringo over to the house for dinner, the neighbors will talk. In fact, she'll probably make sure everyone in the neighborhood finds out. So for her, it's a feather in her cap, and for you, just that good old gringo advantage. And sure, there's always that sly secondary motive if there's an unattached daughter or two in the family for mom or pop to invite a nice gringo over for dinner. Often, they're thinking maybe sparks would fly, but nice to have a gringo in the family. Now, I'm not handing you a load of old vomit here either. That's happened not only to me, but quite a number of gringos who come down and hook up with immersion families. You longtime listeners will remember maybe 250 shows ago or so, I spoke about how many Latin immersion families, especially the ones way off the gringo tourist trail, will use that opportunity of having a gringo around the house to parade a few of their unattached female family members around. I've been through that one before. And you know, soon enough, you figure out what's going on. Every few nights, an aunt will knock on the door about 5 or 6 o'clock at night, just dropping over to visit and say hello, and she'll have a daughter or a niece in tow. Those daughters and nieces, by the way, seem just a little too dressed up for the occasion. So, all you single guys out there, if you're going to stay at an immersion family off the gringo tourist trail, get ready for that. It could happen to you. And on the gringo tourist trail, well, you won't see that too much. People are just a bit more jaded. And it's obvious, gringos aren't the rare fashionable oddity they are when off the tourist trail. Unfortunately, everyone's a dollar sign and there's really no special cachet. However, off the tourist trail, you are a B-grade rock star. But back to the Latin American racism and classism angle. So then, what Latin country or countries might you think would rate at the bottom of the scale? In other words, colorblind and very equal opportunity-minded. Well, you could probably guess all day and not come up with that little country, Uruguay. And it surely has a lot to do with ex-president Mujica's attitude about society and politics when he was in office. Remember, he was the guy that had no bodyguards and drove to work every day in an old Volkswagen. And his wife drove to work every day on her little scooter. So as much as he really was a dyed-in-the-wool socialist, you gotta love him for that. However, here comes another very interesting news story in Spanish, of course, showing that even the more modern progressive countries like Uruguay have certain socialist liberal policies that sometimes backfire, and worse. Again, I'll paraphrase and translate and read the interesting part. It starts out by saying, Uruguayan residents were baffled as Syrian families, that's Syrian, stood with arms open outside the headquarters of the presidency of Uruguay. These recent Syrian immigrants are asking to leave Uruguay because they find the cost of living way too expensive. Okay, let me stop for a second here and say, you all know there's a huge immigration problem happening in Europe. Mostly Muslim immigrants and Africans flooding into Western Europe in record numbers. Anyway, that said, as the United States gets flooded with Latins, Europe is being flooded with Africans and Muslims. And in Europe, anyway, they're fighting it out right now, deciding who's going to take how many and where are they going to go. But now the story's about Syrians in Montevideo, Uruguay. What's that all about? Turns out, since former President Mujica was such a nice guy, he offered last year, when he was still in office, to help Syrian refugees by accepting a certain number of them into his country. But back to the news article. It says on Montevideo, Uruguay, National News TV, one Al-Shebi Merhi, 51, a Syrian, says he and his family are disappointed in Uruguay. He says, the food is too expensive here and the wages are low. How am I supposed to feed my family? There were, get this, 17 people in his family. Him, his wife, and his 15 frickin' children. So the report goes on to say, Al-Shabi and his family arrived in Uruguay in October at the invitation of President Mujica, received free housing, as is, by the way, the right of all Uruguayans, even though these visiting Syrians are just temporary residents. And their 15 kids received the right to free public education, free health care, not to mention a first in Latin America, monthly financial assistance too, which is the right of all Uruguayans, of which they're not, so they're getting special dispensation. Wait a minute. Let me stop right here. Doesn't that system sound an awful lot like the welfare system up in the States? Free housing, free education, free healthcare, free financial assistance monthly. Well, there's reason number 2,246 not to move to Uruguay, I guess. Anyway, the article goes on to say, yes, Al-Shibi and his wife did find work, but he said the wages they received are very low, saying, Uruguay is a very expensive country. Yes, it's true. And the job offers and the access to them, well, it's just not the same for us as it is with Uruguayans. Now, Uruguay's Secretary of Human Rights, Javier Miranda, says, by law, the Uruguayan state supports immigrants like the Syrians for 2 entire years. We cannot do more than that, he said. And yes, Mr. Al-Shibi did say, true, his kids can get a free education in Uruguay, but the food, too expensive. How am I going to feed my 15 children, he said, while being interviewed barefoot in the living room of his state-provided home. Meanwhile, the TV, also provided by the Uruguayan government, is tuned to an Arabic channel, to which Al-Shibi points out that, unfortunately, there are no Uruguayan government programs that allow you to develop any skills or activities. Then he complains, they give you no sheep, no cows, and no land. Meanwhile, a Uruguayan government spokesman and political scientist, Daniel Chisquedi, says that President Mujica did have a good idea, in line with the tradition of Uruguay, to be a country of immigrants and a land of peace. He showed a high sensitivity by allowing the Syrians in. However, everything was much more complicated than expected. The cultural differences, he said, were vastly underestimated. In addition, he said, Uruguay is not a country overflowing with opportunities. It's not like Argentina, Brazil, or Mexico. If you come to our country, our economy requires only highly skilled workers or people willing to invest, which is not at all the case with these Syrian people. And finally, when the interviewer pushed the TV mic in the face of a local observer in front of the presidential palace, the Uruguayan lady said, just think of it. All this commotion and all this publicity over five Syrian families, a total of 42 Syrian people that came to Uruguay in October last year. All right, so there's an article that deserves to get some play in the First World Press, don't you think? But it won't. So if you're thinking there's sort of a low-level Muslim invasion into South America, think about these numbers. A total of 42 Syrians have entered Uruguay legally in the past year. Okay, but you know, there's one thing they didn't explain in that article. That bit about the Syrian guy sitting in his living room, provided by the state, his TV tuned to an Arabic channel. Now, I've been in every Latin American country, and I've only seen Arabic channels in the very big ones, like Mexico, Peru, Argentina, and Brazil. Of course, things change rapidly. Maybe they've got Arabic TV pay-per-view. Who knows? Oh, and by the way, the other day I was talking to an expat that came to one of my seminars. He's living down here with his family permanently now. And I can't remember the conversation exactly, but I remember him saying that before he came down, he was quizzed by some of the family members. You know, they always think it's the wrong move. One family member of his alluded to the fact that a lot of Muslims are pouring into Latin America. So shouldn't he be worried? And you know, statements like that always come from people who've never actually had any boots on the ground down here. They'll just pile on all kinds of excuses and grab at any straw to try to dissuade you from leaving the good old USSA. At least some people will anyway. But as far as this new expat, here's the facts. He moved down to Guatemala and he mentioned to me that as far as he can determine, in all of greater Guatemala City, with a population over 3 million, there are only two mosques. Now, the whole country of Guatemala has got about 15 or 16 million people. And it appears there are only three other mosques in the country, one in each of the other three biggest cities, which makes for a grand total of five mosques in the whole country of 15 or 16 million. Now, there could be more, but that seems to be the count right now. So what does that say about the Muslim population in Guatemala, for example? Well, you know, Muslims are very, very devout. In fact, in some ways, extreme about attending their services in mosques. So if they've got five mosques in the whole country of Guatemala, how does that stack up to other Western countries and locales in the world? Well, let's take the state of Illinois, where I'm from. Did you know that the entire state of Illinois has about 110 mosques? So then what's that got to do with anything? Well, I'm mentioning Illinois because Guatemala and Illinois have nearly the same population. Illinois may be 2 million less, but close. So that said, I can see no Muslim invasion of Latin America anytime soon. I mean, come on, Illinois has 20 times as many mosques as Guatemala. So if you're obsessed about some kind of Muslim uprising, where's it going to be? Okay, now for an email. Starts out, hi Johnny, you expat savant. I've been listening to your show for 5 years or so and have taken much that you say to heart. I am currently living in Central America, but I don't really want to tell you why or how because you will instantly put me in the bad category. We all got to do what we got to do. Like I said, I agree with much of what you have to say, just not all. I hope you continue to do well. Thanks for my favorite podcast, Scott. Okay, so what's he referring to? You long-term, even short-time listeners know how much I hammer on NGOs, do-gooders, U.S. embassy types, military, whatever. So I have to assume that Scott's career path is somewhere along that trajectory. And believe me, that's not the first time I've gotten an email like that. In fact, when I was doing my regular live radio shows down here in Latin America, there was always an open line or two for callers, you know, just like radio shows up in the States. And you know, with almost every live show I did, my board engineer guy would shoot me a hand signal, meaning to pick up on the line that wasn't on the air. And that would be someone who wanted to speak with me privately, talk about a few things, and never ever would want his or her voice on the air. Yep, I'd get calls from military guys stationed down here. Also, U.S. corporate types stationed down here for a while, like, for example, Used to have a Costco executive call me all the time. I had United Nations people calling me. And of course, US, Canadian, and British embassy people too. Yes, they were the most cautious. Sometimes they'd even whisper to me. How do you think I got all that inside information? Back then, when I had my live radio shows, almost no first world people down here had live streaming radio off the internet. It didn't exist then. They missed the rock and roll radio DJs they had back up in their hometown in the States. So I filled that spot. Of course, these days up in the States, it's all canned music and canned this and that, so it's all over up there. But 10 or 15 years ago, you might remember it was alive and well and a lot of fun. So even though I'd say evil and crass things about NGOs and do-gooders and especially embassy people, they all still tuned into my program. Why? Well, insiders there told me because I was one guy that was telling it like it is. In fact, how do you think I got invited to all those embassy parties I told you about on some past shows? When all I ever did was rip them new anuses when I was on live radio. Just like Nick Lowe sang in 1979, "You've gotta be cruel to be kind." I mean, really, that's when you know you're making the impact when you've got embassy people calling you off the air, egging you on and giving you the inside dope, too. So anyway, Scott, I understand where you're coming from with that email. Don't worry, I won't pick on you. Not if you're doing something constructive down here, like building outhouses for Jesus. It's a much more honest and decent gig than working for the U.S. Embassy. That said, let me mention once again that in January, I'm having my Expat Insider Seminar. And if you sign up by November 1st, there's a $500 per person early bird discount. So as of the date this show goes out, October 25th, you've got exactly 7 days to get in on that early bird deal. Go to www.thenewexpat.com. Click the link on the top of the page that says Johnny's 2016 Insider Seminar and sign up before the normal prices kick in. You know, every first world person I talk to these days has a premonition or a feeling that something bad is going to happen any time now up in the States. Everybody with a brain, it seems, has a feeling of impending doom. I'm sure you listeners feel that too. So what are you going to do when the big blowout comes? You're going to channel surf and dial 911? Well, good luck with that. You're much, much better off getting a plan B started. So come on down to my Latin seminar in January. Come and see how you too can live the good life down here in Latin America in a way you've never thought possible.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me, just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.